Blog Talk Radio.
Foreboding no, wait a second. That wouldn't be right. That the Romans are coming, folks. Be ready, because it is. It is. Welcome to Rattle It's Your Broadcasting Network. Welcome to Source Material. We are kicking off When in Rome Week right here Monday night. Your Monday night delight. And it's me, Jesse Starcher, and your old pal, Wheezy himself, Mark Rattledge, joining us tonight. No Ronnie Adams. That's all right. We're going to man the ship without him. We miss him. Hopefully he'll be able to make it there next week, whatever we're going to be doing. But Mark Rattledge, how you doing this evening?
You miss, like, all my other names. It's your old pal Wheezy, the mandated reporter, and frankly, I'm mortified.
That's right.
Lap dance enthusiast and the master of schedules.
Oh, Mr. yeah, the master of schedules. You need to work in a toga reference in there at some point for Rome, for winning Rome Week here. So I'm doing yoga in my toga or something like that. I don't know.
Yoga in my toga. I am the yoga toga hoser. Yeah, I have to tell you, I was talking to my wife earlier, and I said, I had plans for next year, you know, with all of the Marvel and DC related content coming to your television and movie screens. I said, there's a lot of comic book stuff to be had, you know, and like, I had some big plans. Like, if I get out ahead of this, you know, we could do stuff for Supergirl, Flash again, Arrow, Cloak and Dagger. Next year there'll be more Marvel Netflix stuff. There's The Gifted that's coming out. There's just all kinds. And then I suddenly realized, as I'm doing all this, I'm like, well, one, at some point Jesse's going to show up to my house with a bat. And it's like, all right, I didn't sign on to do a book for every fucking show that's out there. God damn it. Number one. Number two, I don't even know if I've got that kind of time. But, yeah, there's a lot of comic book content coming out just next year alone. This past weekend they announced three X-Men movies, one for the New Mutants, one for Deadpool 2, and then for some odd reason, because apparently the X-Men Fox way of doing things is phase one, create X-Men movie, phase three profit, and they just don't go – they just fucking skip phase two altogether. We're going right from Apocalypse to Dark Phoenix. Like,
wow.
We barely know this Jean Grey, this version of Jean Grey.
Yeah. I just watched Rise of Apocalypse, or not Rise of Apocalypse, Age of Apocalypse. What was it, about a week or so ago? And, I mean, Jean Grey had, granted she was a pretty significant part of that movie, but very... You know, you certainly did not get much of an in-depth look into her character, who she is. You just know she's powerful as all get out, you know?
Wouldn't it have made more sense to do Inferno first?
I would have loved to have seen Inferno.
I mean, I know Inferno in the timeline of the X-Men doesn't come first. That came later. But I mean, who gives a shit? I mean, let's do
Fox
some other big bad. Yeah, let's do some big bad X-Men characters we haven't seen yet before we jump right into Dark Phoenix.
Yeah, and the thing is that the weight that Dark Phoenix held, number one, obviously, like you just pointed out, we don't know who this Jean Grey character is, or at least she's not been fleshed out that much. Number two, I mean, this team was devastated, especially Cyclops, when, you know, she passed away in that storyline. And it had repercussions. Well, we all know the Phoenix was the most powerful being in the known X-Men universe. As far as we knew, there were certain ones that may have rivaled that power, but the Phoenix was an astral being of unimaginable power. But when it wreaked its havoc, it devastated the team, and there was a lot of recovery that had to be done, to where I think Cyclops left the team, all sorts of stuff. And that's, of course, all, you know, in the comics. But man, I agree. There's not much to gnaw on there before you get right to dessert.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I don't think I would have jumped right into Dark Phoenix if I'm producing or if I'm one of the executives at Fox. I would have said, let's absolutely do Inferno first. Let's do Mr. Sinister. If you were to do a second film, if you were to say, okay, after Apocalypse, we're going to do three X-Men movies with this young, sexy cast. Okay, first one is Inferno for sure.
Mm-hmm.
If I tap you, you're another producer, and I say, Jesse, mm-hmm. of the X-Men stories we haven't touched on, including of the original trilogy, since we don't want to double back and do those over again. So no God Loves, Man Kills, no what other one they base the second and third movies on. What big time story, what big time villain would you do before you got after Inferno, but before Dark Phoenix?
Man, I don't know. There's always a good bit of those storylines to pick from. First thing that came to mind was Fall of the Mutants, but I honestly cannot remember the bulk of that story. I think the Reavers might have had something to do with it. When I started reading, it was late 80s, so Inferno was one of the first ones that I picked up, and I really, really dug that. Not only did it affect the mutant universe, it affected all of Marvel. There were Inferno crossovers everywhere. But that tied in with New Mutants as well, because one of Josh Calandris's favorite characters here recently, Magic, the sister of Colossus, ended up dying in that storyline. So Inferno's a good choice. I'm trying to think of anything else that really pops out. It's something I'd have to go to the internet for and go like, oh yeah, okay, yeah, that one's a good one. Are there any other ones other than Inferno that you can think of off the top of your head?
That's the problem. They've done a lot of them already. If they don't want to double back and do stories they've already done, we are eventually going to get to Pax Romana, I promise, folks.
Yeah, that's all right. Stick with us. Trust us.
But like I said, they've already done God Loves, Man Kills. They've done Days of Future Past. They've done Apocalypse.
I mentioned the Mutant Massacre, which that might be what I'm getting confused with. Fall of the Mutants, Inferno. We've already talked about there's Days of Future Present. I liked, some of these, man, I don't know if they could go to film, like Extinction Agenda. I don't know if they would be willing. They've used time travel, one of my favorite tropes in any plot devices in any movie, but
this is a franchise that doesn't need any more fucking time travel.
So much of that shit used in this. Because we got Cable, when we expect to see Cable, I mean, that is Gene and Scott's son from the future. So it'd be cool to bring him back and maybe throw him in there. I'm looking to see if there's anything here online that makes me go, okay, yeah. We can't do that. Can't do House of M as much as I'd love to see that.
You could do House of M, but you'd have to change it significantly.
Oh yeah, it's not going to be as far-reaching in any way.
You could basically, you just have to change who his daughter is. And if they came up with another character to be Magneto's daughter, who says, "Whoop, no more mutants."
Yeah, and, no, I mean, the fans would shit all over that. There's no way. There is no way somebody would say that, oh, yeah, I can readily accept. There's already bad enough blood from a lot of comic book fans out there who are upset about them trying to phase the whole, trying to phase mutants out of comics by making them inhumans, which is something I don't know much about other than just what I've heard people bitching about. So, you know, if they say, oh, yeah, this is not the Scarlet Witch, well, but she's going to have all this power. Nah, no, not happening. I don't think that's one that could be done well. Mutant Massacre. Let me read this one real quick. It says, in one of the most iconic X-Men crossovers ever, the mutants venture into the sewers below Manhattan to save the Morlocks from extermination. Unlike many superhero epics, they weren't entirely successful. Mutant Massacre is one of the more violent X-Men tales, with plenty of innocents falling victim to Sinister's Morlocks, and even an X-Men being maimed in battle. Several other memorable superheroes were dragged into the battle, including Daredevil and Thor. Doesn't hold up as quite as well as certain books were handled with more maturity than others. Still, Mutant Massacre is an essential read. Okay. That doesn't give us a whole lot, but man, listen to the titles that it affected. Obviously, Uncanny X-Men, X-Factor, New Mutants. Went into Thor for 2 issues. Power Pack. Do you remember Power Pack?
I do.
That's Franklin Richards and some other bunch of kids. And then apparently it also involved Daredevil. So there's that. I don't know, man. So maybe what they're having a hard time is finding something that would actually, you know, seem like a good story. There's plenty of it out there, though. That's the thing. I mean, but you got a lot of characters you can't touch. I'm sure that Wolverine is one we're not going to see in the X-Men franchise for a while, unless they're going to bring his daughter into it, but that's way far in the future. They can't unless they use time travel. So,
well,
because
I was
now
just looking at an IGN says, you know, top 25, and two things came up. One was Broodfall. And then one was Wolverine versus the Reavers. I mean, I think if you're just trying to get some stories out there before you go right to the fucking Dark Phoenix. See, here's the other problem. Are they going to go cosmic? And can they go cosmic? How much, you know, do they have control over the Shi'ar Empire? Or are they going to somehow do this without going cosmic? Because if they introduce the cosmic element to the X-Men, that takes us down a whole other rabbit hole of stories that they could do.
That's true. Clearly, with the introduction of the Phoenix, I mean, that is a cosmic entity. So, I agree. I mean, that's something that they could easily do. Bring in the Shi'ar. Wolverine versus the Reavers. You recognize that image? Because I just showed you guys that cover yesterday, I think. Or
what?
That was some violent stuff, man. Pretty epic.
I think to answer my own question, that's what I would do. I think if I'm going to do the Dark Phoenix, first of all, I mean, without knowing contractually what characters they have access to and what they don't, I still think I would work with Marvel. And take a look at the characters that I do have, and I would get the X-Men to go get them off planet Earth and get them into space.
Mm-hmm.
And that way they have a nice landing path clear for the Dark Phoenix saga. I would have to do something along the lines of, you know, the Shi'ar Empire. The problem is they don't have access to the Kree, and I know that was a big part of the Shi'ar. So who knows?
Was Scott and Alex's dad in the films at all yet? He wasn't, was he?
No.
Okay. His dad, or their dad, was actually part of a group called the Starjammers. They originally, in the comic books, they believed he was dead, if I remember correctly. So there's another tie to some cosmic stuff, because he ends up going out into space and doing all sorts of stuff. So maybe he could come back and say, oh, hey, you're our last hope. We need help. And then somehow get the Star involved and they head out to space.
Yeah, maybe that's the way to do it, is to have the Star Jammers come get Scott, and then the X-Men have to kind of go after him. But they need Scott because his dad's been kidnapped by the Shi'ar and blah, blah, blah. Yeah,
and then the Legion shows up and then, you know, just gets crazy.
Yeah. then the dam breaks.
And then next thing you know, you're looking at Sid's ass. And then
exactly.
All hell
right.
broke loose.
So the point of this whole thing was there's a lot of content next year. And me and you are going to have a discussion as to what exactly we're going to link up with source material and what you're going to have to tell me to go fuck myself. I'm not doing it. So
it looks like, yeah, I saw you adding some stuff there to the schedule. So I'm excited, man. You know how scared I was of oversaturation, and man, it just seems like it continues to just mound and mound on top of mound of stuff that's coming out, which, mm-hmm. As a comic book fan, I am absolutely excited, but you know my pessimism, or I shouldn't say pessimism, my fear, my unfounded fear of that stuff. So, I mean, we had this discussion a while back, folks, and Mark Radley set me straight. But
Jesse Stark is a little suspicious.
I'm a little scared. There's always great stories to be told, though. That's the whole purpose of the Source Material podcast. We're bringing stories that you may not have had the opportunity to read, and you can give it a listen and see what you think. The story that we're covering tonight, Pax Romana. Mark, there wasn't anything else you wanted to talk about there before we head to, before I start trying to segue.
Nope, hit it, segue, man.
All right. Get on my two-wheel scooter and rock and roll. Here is Pax Romana. And it was actually optioned for a TV show, according to the wiki, a couple years ago. Now, folks...
Yes, currently it's in production, from what I understand.
Sweet. If it's going to be something that they're going to make into a property, I'd be very, very interested in watching it. Like I said, I love time travel as a plot device. And this story right here is... I mean, time travel is the central reason as to why this story exists. Let me explain what Pax Romana is. First off, the story comes from 2008, and it's directly from the mind of a name that you might be familiar with, Mark, a guy by the name of Jonathan Hickman. Do you remember reading Secret Wars with us, or at least chiming in for a couple issues before you actually decided you were just done with it?
You're talking about this most recent 2016 Secret Wars?
Yes.
Yes, I read it.
That was Jonathan Hickman. He also had his hand in a lot of the Avengers issues or the Avengers storylines that were leading up to Secret Wars. So recently, he's been a pretty big name when it comes to pretty much all things Marvel. I mean, Secret Wars was the... That was the event that kind of took things for Marvel. Supposedly, it was going to put things in a different light for Marvel. You know, some things were going to drop off this piece of pizza, and other things were going to stay as we collided the ultimate universe along with the 616, and we're bringing in Old Man Logan. So anyway, Secret Wars brought all these things together, and the main story was told by Jonathan Hickman. Now, he got his start, I can't remember when it said, but this particular book came out in 2008, so this is 9 years ago. And the fun thing about this book is it was published through Image. Now, this was, I assume, before he became a really big name, and when he had, you know, all the bigwigs telling him that, okay, you can't do this with this character, you can't do that with that character. This is an independent book, so he could tell a story, use any characters that he wanted, and just so long as he tells the story, he's going to be satisfied. And from what I understand, this is like one of his favorite works that he's done. So Pax Romana, I'll go ahead and read the definition of Pax Romana. It is Latin for Roman peace. It was the long period of relative peacefulness and minimal expansion by the Roman military force experienced by the Roman Empire after the end of the final war of the Roman Republic and before the beginning of the crisis of the third century. So there's your little history lesson on what Pax Romana is. Now, we already talked about why we're doing this book. It's Win in Rome Week here. Well, I'm not going to be able to say that right. Win in Rome week here on the Radulichan Broadcasting Network. But I do want to give a shout out to our good buddy Josh Calandros, who suggested this a long time ago. I think it was when we first were speaking on Why the Last Man. We were discussing Why the Last Man, and I was kind of picking Josh's brain as to other books to read. And he said one of them, because I mentioned I was into time travel, he said one of them you have to check out is Pax Romana, because it's really good. So, and then, Mark, you just stumbled upon it by yourself, right? I mean, were you just looking for stuff that deals with Rome, or how did you come about this book? Because you were actually the one that suggested it for this week.
Yeah, I mean, what it was I happened to have accidentally booked an entire week of stuff dealing with Rome, and I thought, okay, well, I had a couple of shows here. On the Metal Hammer of Doom this week, we're doing XDO, The Immortal Wars. That was one of the ones that Cooper wanted to do, who may not actually be on the show, but we're doing it anyway. and I noticed that there was a Netflix show that was only 6 episodes long. So I'm like, oh, that's an easy one to kind of get through. That was Roman Empire, Reign of Blood. And I thought, all right, you know, I'll add one more show to this. I'll have somebody come on and make me watch something having to do with Rome. And that's the Lizzie McGuire movie that Pat's going to make me watch. And then I thought, okay, well, then we need one more show here. So I'm going to twist Jesse's arm and make him do a show. Now we just need a comic book that focuses on Rome. And I really didn't know where else to go once I had this sort of general idea of what it was I wanted to do. And then you guys suggested this, and I'm like, this sounds like a great idea. The concept of we're going to send an elite military back in time to the age of Constantine so that we can wipe out the Muslim religion before it even gets going and preserve the Roman Catholic Church. I was like, that's brilliant. That's an awesome idea. So I was all about it. I was all for giving this a shot. And, you know, one of the things, again, this year was I wanted to sort of break out of my comfort zone and, you know, read things or watch things that I wouldn't normally go after. And I tend not to wander off the – frankly, this is the first year I've never read so much DC in my entire life. I was a Marvel guy through and through. And, you know, occasionally I would read some Aliens and Predator from the Dark Horse label. But but this year I was like, you know what, I'm gonna try some new things, try some different comic books, and give some things a chance I wouldn't normally read. And this came from Image, and it's something I'd never heard of before, but it sounded like a great idea, and I thought it would be fun to give it a shot.
And you were all about it. Did you recognize the name when you saw Jonathan Hickman was the one writing it? Was that something that popped in your mind, or is he still kind of off the radar for you still?
I mean, I recognized him as a sort of a sci-fi comic book writer.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, all right. Well, let's hop into it. You got anything to say before we jump into issue one here?
Nope. Let's do it.
All right. All right. So issue one, just like Mark said, the concept here, time travel has been invented. And those that control this somewhat godly power are the Catholic Church. In the year 2000, with this at their disposal, the Pope and select cardinals convened to figure out if time travel should be used or the technology destroyed. They surprisingly decide the former by traveling to some time in Rome in the 300s, the time of Constantine, in order to secure their religious influence to the world. A year later, they approach and recruit U.S. General Nicholas Chase. Now, I said a year later. I should say this is a year after they convened. So they approach and recruit a guy by the name of U.S. General Nicholas Chase to lead and form the army that will be traveling back, and also to assist Cardinal Pelle in establishing their vision. The endeavor is somewhat a success, as the Vatican sends back a warehouse full of 5,000 men. We got weapons. We got tanks. We got helicopters, missiles, satellites, and nuclear weapons to the year 312 AD. The only blip in the system is that some of the men on the outer fringes of the time field didn't make it back with them. But this was somewhat expected, and they should show back up a few years on down the road. Now, soon after their arrival, Cardinal Pelle decides to give a rousing speech to let the army know what they can expect and how it is God who gave them this power and it is God that wills the church to make the change. However, in mid-speech, in front of the whole of the army, the cardinal was gunned down, and the man holding the pistol is none other than General Nicholas Chase. So that's issue one. Okay, now let me go ahead and start out here. When it comes to time travel stories, normally what we usually see is like we may be used to the Back to the Future. At least I am. You know I am. Where they're in a vehicle and they can only carry like one or two people at a time and a hoverboard and an almanac or whatever. This is a warehouse and an army that they send back, what, 1,700 years? So right there, I'm like, oh, man, that has the possibility to – I mean, if you can send back a whole army, you're not going to have much of a problem getting done what you need done. Now, of course, it does take those religious elements as it's the Catholic Church going back to wipe out secure their stance in the world and make the Roman Empire a fixture in the world's history, but also to wipe out any other religions that may challenge them. So what do you think of this first issue, Mark?
Oh, it was a little slow to start. The series definitely picks up issues 2, 3, and 4. I mean, I think in general, I liked what I read. It just, this first bit, it took me a little to get into it. The artwork, I can't complain about it. It's clean art. It's interesting art. It's a little hard to follow at times, but I like I liked the sort of the square talk bubbles. That was pretty easy to follow. Like I said, there was a lot of information to get out there in the beginning, and I think I found that to be a bit much for me. Just to kind of give you a comparison, in 2 weeks we're gonna be reviewing the Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 1 Abnett Run, and boy does that thing flow. I'm enjoying the shit out of that so far. Yeah,
that's good.
The same thing, you know, I talked to you about a book that I read just for my own shits and giggles, the Harley Quinn and Power Girl. I mean, it's a fun romp. Everything flows. It was just one thing into another. And with this, by comparison, it's so heavy up front with a lot of information. It almost kind of took me out of the book. But I was like, you know what?
Yeah, I want to
know
what's
happening here. I'm interested in what they're doing, so I stayed with it.
What do you think when you hit the – I don't want to call it a prose piece, but it's kind of like a breakdown of what the conversations are. There was a section in each of these issues where it was just two pages of text pretty much and a little bit of a picture up at the top where they were kind of – you know, one may be talking about the conversation that occurred between the cardinals and the pope or the generals and the colonels of the army. Did that take you out when you saw the text?
Look, I'm going to tell you right now, I read that once in the first issue and then I wouldn't do it again.
you
anytime,
skipped over it? Oh no.
Every single time I skipped those parts, I'm like, nope. If I wanted to read a screenplay, I'd read a screenplay.
I was right there with you. I'm right there with you because at first I was like, the thing is, I did read it. I did my due diligence here and I made sure to do an issue. But the thing is that it did keep it interesting because at first I was like, oh man, this is intimidating. When you're reading a comic, you do not want to read, at least I don't want to read a large amount of prose or a large amount of just text on two pieces of paper. I totally understand where you're coming from. However, it did fit in with the story, like in issues 2, 3, and 4. It kept it in the story. So you would see what the conversation was where they're discussing, okay, well, should we use this for good or should we use this technology or shouldn't we? And then when they have the discussions later on, it was something that I got used to and was able to make it through. Now, as to why he did that and didn't use, you know, pictures, obviously, or whatever to convey the conversation, I think I may understand why, especially if you're doing a comic book, and he has freedom to do what he wants here, I assume, with Image. You know, this is his creator-owned book. He can do what he can do what he likes. But, you know, if you're on a tight schedule, let's just say you've got a lot of books that you've got to finish up there, Mark Radulich, and you're writing all these comic books, but you want to get the bulk of your story told, well, what better way to do it than this right here instead of having to animate it panel by panel? So I kind of see why he did that, and I don't hold it too much against him. What do you you were talking about the layout and the way the word bubbles were. Has this been a – was this a comic layout, the art, when it comes to the art and the way that the dialogue boxes – have you ever seen a comic like this before?
Not that I recall. I mean, I can't say for certain I've never seen a comic book like that before. It's just not one that I necessarily remember.
Okay. All right. I mean, I think – it was pretty unique, in my opinion. I it's been a while since I've seen, especially the art style. You mentioned the art style. It's, I mean, what do we have there? Like maybe two or three colors on the page, and the rest of it was just, you know, just an outline either in black or in white.
I have to say it's very artistic looking. I mean, it's interesting. That's what I'm saying. Like we've done a couple of books now where I've really complained about the art, and I don't want to come across as like, well, you know, I don't know art, but I know what I like, and it has to be a thing. You know, I'm willing to accept some degree of fancy, you know, interesting looking art, but I think there are limitations. You know, and I think, you know, depending on what you do with it, look, yeah, I think you have to be able to. You have to be able to convey what's happening in the story. I think that was my big problem with like Wacky Races and some of the other stuff we've talked about in the past, which is if I didn't understand what was happening in the story, then it doesn't really matter how fancy your artwork is. You failed. You failed in the one thing you are supposed to do as an artist, is convey convey the images in the story. Mm-hmm. If you can't do that much, then You're just making a bunch of nonsense.
Yeah. Yeah, I had no idea that going into this that that Jonathan Hickman was an illustrator as well. And, you know, he can write a lot better than I can, and he can draw and illustrate a lot better than I can. So, yeah, it was unique. And that's what's neat about an independent book. You're going to see some things that will push the boundaries of what we're used to with the big two, DC and Marvel, when it comes to structure of a page, which there were panels sometimes, and then sometimes there weren't panels, which was neat. It was just like, you know, the images kind of flowed together. And it wasn't hard to follow when it come to at first it was a little jarring when it came to the dialogue, like, okay, where do I go next? Do I go to the right, or do I go down, or do I go to the left? But I quickly got used to that, which it wasn't anything that was horrible, and you had to get yourself over. It took me out of the book. All right. So anything else on issue one before we go to issue two, sir?
No, I'm good.
All right. Issue two. So picking up where we left off, all right, the Cardinal, the one guy that the Pope gave these instructions to go back and change and secure history for the Catholic Church, has just been gunned down by the American general in front of the whole army. All right, now we get some insight in issue two as to why General Chase killed the Cardinal. His intent, I think, now, Mark, you step in here if you took it different than I did, but it seemed like his intent was to eliminate inequality amongst religion and to put society on a better path. I think he was upset with the fact that the Cardinal, one of the things I think he said was the Catholic Church was there to watch civilization crawl when it could run. And General Chase decided, well, you know what? I'm taking him out of the whole plan, and I'll enact my own. And we're going to get we're going to get a great society jump started here in Rome in the 300s. So his goal is to put society on a better path. Now, they also discuss other long-term goals. In that prose piece in issue 2, they're talking about, okay, well, what about population control? You know, when we hit the population move, because they know everything that's coming in the next, you know, whatever, 1,700 years. They have a good idea of what history lies before them. So they're talking about things about population control, possibly ending slavery before it even gets started, which they decide not to, which is interesting. Who to put in power as empires rise and fall. They also talk about distributing their beliefs by assimilating other cultures into the Roman Empire. And it's a noble goal that he must convince everybody else. He's convincing, really there's only like five or six people that he brings in and talks to, that General Chase talks to and explains to what they need to do. And these high-ranking officials of his army. Now, I'm not going to go through and name them. There's a couple that are important, but I'll bring their names up here in a few. But their first action is to acquire the allegiance of Constantine, the soon-to-be Augustus of Rome. Now, in this issue, one of General Chase's men, Fabio Rossi, I think is his name, he agrees to marry Constantine's half-sister in a formal ceremony to show solidarity of the two forces. So General Chase shows up at Constantine, which was a neat part of the book, where he shows up and talks to Constantine and says, look, we're here to help you. And I want to show you. It's not like he was trying to keep anything secret in regards to time travel. He was very open about what he was there to do. You know, here's my tank. Here's my helicopter. This is my army. I'm coming here to help you out. So the first thing that they're going to do is kind of make an allegiance with Constantine in order to, I wouldn't say keep him as a puppet, but have some influence as to where society is going to go based off of his rule. So anyway, Fabio agrees to marry Constantine's half-sister in a formal ceremony to show solidarity of the army and the Roman Empire. It is now far too easy for the great army of Rome, now with all the advanced weaponry and strategics, to handle any potential usurping force that lies ahead. Or is it? All right, so that's issue 2, Mark. You have anything that stood out to you that you'd like to discuss on that one?
Yeah, I'm glad you were able to sort of explain what the issue there was, because I kind of missed what his beef was with the Cardinal. You know, I'm skipping ahead here, but I just remember thinking as I read this about I took a lot of classes about, in college, I took a lot of classes about the classics, you know, about Roman history, about Constantine, and I've read a ton, it's just a shit ton of books about the Roman Empire and the history of religion and all of that. And I just I remember reading that, you know, there's this doesn't deal with one of the volcanoes erupting, but I remember reading about, and this has already happened, but
is this Vesuvius?
I remember thinking, it might have been Vesuvius, it might have been something else. But there's a volcano that erupts in antiquity that, had it not erupted and just destroyed civilization at that time, it was like if civilization was allowed to sort of continue unimpeded without any other major catastrophes, we'd have had space travel by the time of Columbus.
Oh, and, Pompeii?
Yeah. That might have been
I'm just throwing stuff out that I find on the internet, but I remember Pompeii being one that definitely wiped out. Like, I can remember seeing people I think they were petrified in ash as they went through digging out that city. Yeah, that was a bad one. But yeah, so if it wasn't for that, we'd be much more advanced.
I mean, like I said, you can't account for things like the five Roman emperors who basically destroyed Rome, you know, you know, I mean, the whole reason why we have a Dark Ages is because you had, you know, you had some shitty Roman emperors who then were not prepared to stop the, you know, the Germanic invasions, the Germanic barbarian tribes. And then so you have this great civilization that falls apart despite it all, and, mm-hmm. and, you know, and sets history back thousands of years. So again, when we say if history is allowed to go unimpeded and you assume we have competent leaders and we don't have things like the Black Plague that kills millions of people, you know, things like that, there's a lot that goes into it. But yeah, theoretically, if history is allowed to march forward from antiquity unimpeded and without major natural disasters, you know, we have space travel by the time of Columbus. It's estimated.
Wow, that's insane.
Which I find fascinating. And that goes right to the end of the book. Where,
yeah, it does.
I think it's like, but it's like, I think present day at the end of the book is the 1400s, and they're
mm-hmm.
like colonizing Mars.
Yeah. Yeah. See, it's neat that you have a good little bedrock of knowledge in regards to that. When we chose this book, I shared that playlist on Facebook with you guys, that YouTube playlist I put together. And one of the things that really intimidated me was the history that was involved with the Roman, because I have no idea. I've seen movies, you know, I've seen maybe a couple History Channel things, but I have no idea about Roman history. And when somebody starts saying, yeah, we're going to the 3rd century or 2nd, 4th century, I have no idea. I'm like, okay, I don't know what's going on at that time. Just show me a picture and tell me what's going on. Well, my
fears
were...
Did you understand the significance of why they went... Why Constantine?
After researching, yes. I do now. But as before when I picked this book up, I had no idea. I mean, they kind of explain it a little bit in the book, because the Pope and the Cardinals are sitting there trying to figure out, okay, when do we go? Do we go to the Crusades, or do we go here? And then they're like, let's go ahead and do Constantine, because we got to do Constantine. And so I assume that shortly after, and just from what I read in the book, shortly after this, there's a lot of stuff that goes down that causes the fall of the Roman Empire. Is that right?
Well, okay. And forgive me, folks, if you're tuning into this for a history lesson. My knowledge of this is a little on the fuzzy side. It's been a while. But it is my understanding is that, first of all, we have Constantine basically to thank for the Roman Catholic Church.
Okay.
Allegedly, he has a vision, and he basically solidifies his power by becoming part of the Christian group of Romans, essentially. And it's after Constantine that the Roman Empire starts to split, and it's down the road where, you know, things start to fall apart, and you have the rise of the Muslim Empire. I'm sure people who are actually knowledgeable in history just heard that and went, what the fuck did he just say? But that's like the very broad gist of it.
Okay,
the
so Constantine
broad
is
gist of it.
So they went back to the year of Constantine because that's the genesis. That's where it all begins.
Yeah, he's like the Holy Roman Emperor, like the first one.
Gotcha. Okay. All right, that definitely makes sense then. So they now this history, you know, this history spanning, this time traveling army.
Hey, I actually
is
have
now,
the I actually have the Wikipedia up.
Oh, please. Let loose.
Yeah, cuz this is going to bother me, cuz I sound like such a fucking idiot right now. Constantine the Great, also known as Constantine the First or Saint Constantine, was a Roman emperor from 306 to 337 AD. Was the son of Flavius Valerius Constantinus, a Roman. Oh, that doesn't tell me anything. God damn it.
Here's his family tree.
His favorite color was blue. As Emperor Constantine enacted many administrative. Who cares? The first Roman Empire to claim conversion to Christianity. So you have to remember, Christianity in the time of Rome is a mystery religion. You know, it's the people following Christ are like not looked upon very well. These people are like thought of crazies, you know. The religion of Rome is you know polytheism, right? And so the fact that he converts to Christianity, that's a huge deal.
Oh wow!
Constantine played an influential role in the proclamation of the Edict of Milan, which decreed tolerance for Christianity in the empire. He called for the First Council of Nicaea. At which the Nicene Creed was adopted by Christians. Little stuff about the military, et cetera, et cetera. I believe it's the First Council of Nicaea that actually constructs the Bible.
That's mentioned. That was mentioned in the book, if I remember correctly. Yeah.
And then there's the argument about Arianism, et cetera. So, yeah, that's the whole reason why they chose Constantine.
Okay. So they now this army's at his disposal pretty much, and it's there to defend Constantine as he proceeds to expand with the Roman Empire. So the whole tolerance thing in regards to religion, that was already part of Constantine, it sounds like. I say tolerance, but you said he accepted Christianity, and so that's good, I guess.
Yeah, he converted.
He converted. So we got these guys that are have somewhat of the same mindset. However, what we find out in issue 3 is that his son, a guy by the name of Flavius Julius Crispus, sounds like a potato chip, who was, we are told, in the original history, was murdered by his father after he was found plotting against him. Boy, imagine that. That had to have been some serious shit. And I imagine that's actual history. But have your son plotting against you, and you decide to have him – they say he was murdered by his father. That's not good.
That's old hat in the Roman Empire. That's what happened all the time.
Jeez. So this guy, this Flavius Julius Crispus, he's a wild card for sure. Now as they go forth changing things, the less reliable their knowledge of the future is. I don't think that's spelled out in the book, but I wrote a note here because, you know, they talk about, oh, you know, this guy's a wild card. Well, if he was supposed to be murdered on such and such day, and now you've changed events to where, you know, he would live, I'd be kind of worried about that, but that's not really spelled out in the book. They really do not. There is very little concern about their meddling in time, because that's pretty much the whole purpose that General Chase has. He's like, you know what? We're just fuck it. We're going ahead with everything that we're going to introduce all this technology. We're going to bring this Roman Empire up.
I had a real problem with that. I mean,
oh, me too.
You know, we're talking about people who, you know, believe in the intervening gods and a degree of witchcraft and all kinds of stuff, and you show up with fucking tanks.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
Like, I understand that conceivably there's no way anyone could have done anything about it. So let's assume for a moment Constantine has just a big freak out, you know, and was like, oh my God, witches. It's just a bunch of wizards. I don't understand. What was he going to do about it? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like I get that. But it's still like, it just seemed like there wasn't narratively a lot done with the idea of, why do you have this magic boomstick in your hand?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Christ, more was said about it in Dawn of the Dead or whatever the you know, like, this is my boomstick.
yeah. Army of Darkness.
Dawn of the Dead. It's the Army of Darkness.
I got you.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah, they did not. Did you even get the sense that they were concerned about any type of like paradox is happening? I mean, oh, I'll wipe this bloodline out. Okay, well, you know, 3 or 4 of your guys may disappear. That doesn't even happen. The idea of a paradox doesn't even get considered here. And a lot of stuff that I brought from my time travel plot device.
I was going to say, they play very little with the idea of like time travel. It felt like, yeah, that's not the story that we want to tell here. We want to tell a story about what would happen if the Holy Roman Empire suddenly had the might of a modern military. And that's it. Like the sci-fi elements were completely pushed to the side.
Yeah, they pretty much were. It that letter that I sent to you, there was a letter in the back of the first issue, and one of the things that Jonathan Hickman made sure to express was that this was not a story about religion, even though it had – we're talking about the Catholicism. Oh, boy, I'm not going to be able to say that.
Catholicism?
Catholics, Catholicism, thank you. Christianity, all this. He said it's not a story about religion. It is a story about society. And so I kept that in mind as I continued to read through this and how society would be affected. So we talked about Julius Crispus, Flavius Julius Crispus. Now, we are shown in 328 AD. So this is, I think, 7 years after they showed up. Fabio is tending to his wife, Flavia Julia Constantius, okay? The half-sister of Constantine. This is the guy, this is the lady that he married in order to show a union between the two forces. Now, he's taking care of her. In the original timeline, she dies, I assume, by some illness or something. We just know that she dies shortly after they arrive. Well, Fabio's kind of helping her out and using future technology to kind of keep her alive and assist her. Now, she's fallen ill, and there is another one of the colonels, one of the high-ranking colonels of the army, a female by the name of Manon. I can't remember her first name. She's kind of upset because she feels that the more that the army and the officials that interact and become part of the society of the time, the more they will lose sight of their goal. And there was a big speech that General Chase gave, I think, stating that, you know, hey, if I waver from the goal, you need to get me back on track, or you need to do something to make sure that our army stays focused. And now Manon's kind of worried that, well, he may not be as focused as he used to be, especially a lot of the others are not as well, because they're intermingling. They're becoming compassionate for the people of the time. Now, 9 years later, in 337 AD, if you all got your pencils and keeping track, Flavia passes away. So Fabio's wife, the half-sister of Constantine, passes away. And this leaves Fabio mourning. There's an internal discussion that begins as to who should take the seat of power after Constantine. It's pretty much between Fabio and General Chase, because Constantine is also near death as well. Fabio insists it be one of his children in order to solidify the direction of the empire. So he's saying, hey, put my kid in there. We can easily control him. We shouldn't have any problem. He's a solid dude. Put him in the seat of power, and we're good to go. General Chase, however, has grown close to Constantine and his son, Crispus, and he's become fond of him over the past years. So that's kind of where we leave issue 3, except for the epilogue, where – all of a sudden, there's a flash of light, and this is – we have no idea where this is at. But there's this flash of light, and the ones that were lost to the outer reaches of the time field when they first started finally show back up. And it turns out it's these mercenaries that they had kind of – one of the things that they said was they knew when the Catholic Church sent them back, they kept all the pretty much unimportant people on the outside – of the time field or whatever that was using them to transport, just in case there were some casualties. They wanted the important core members to be in the middle. So these mercenaries, these hired guns, were on the outside that were recruited by General Chase, and they finally arrived. Like, what are we talking here? 17 years later, or something like that, or 16 years later. And so some time's passed. Now, really realizing that this has occurred, that time has passed, the first thing that they're going to do is contact the rest of the army and collect what is owed. So that's kind of where we leave issue 3. We've got a bit of an internal struggle as to who's going to be at the seat of power, and we also have the mercenaries who just show up and they're coming back to get their money. Money, 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 money. Mark Radulich, issue 3. What do you have to say?
I liked issue 3. Like I said, it really picked up here. You know, I was wondering how they were going to handle keeping it, like, interesting once we got to the army, you know, taking out the Germanic barbarian tribes, and, you know, once we actually got to the business of the future army taking, you know, solidifying Rome's strength and power, I was like, okay, mm-hmm. well, there's not a lot of drama in the fighting here. Who's standing up to fucking tanks and, you know, at this age?
Yeah, exactly.
And machine guns. So
snipers.
Yeah, I was like, I don't know how they're going to make that interesting. So the fact that they have the internal conflict going on, and you have these sort of competing ideas, and, you know, as with any human endeavor, things just start to break down. People have agendas. So I thought issue 3 was interesting.
Yeah, the feel that I get from this issue is that, try as they might, I mean, the Roman Empire is just going to destroy itself inevitably. You don't really get, like, there's no heated contention here or anything, but you could almost see the seeds being sown with Manon, where she's upset with the fact that the general is not focused, the fact that there's a question of who's going to be in power, and the choice of who it's going to be actually pits General Chase against one of his handpicked buddies, Fabio. When in Rome, Mark Radulich, you do as the Romans do, correct?
That's right. When in Rome, do as the Romans do.
That is kind of what I thought was going on here, was, well, we're going to start to see things degrade and fall apart, and the whole mission's just going to be put to crap. So, all right. On to issue 4, unless you have anything else to say about issue 3, sir.
Nope, I'm good.
All right, final issue. Now, much to the chagrin of the rest of the higher-ups, General Chase moves forward, coronating Flavius Crispus as Augustus of Rome. So the chosen one has been chosen. It is Constantine's son, who has now got the seat of power for the Roman Empire. Now, there's a tense discussion that occurs among the generals and his colonels about the move, and it is clear there are those that are not happy. General Chase tells them to make a choice to either be with Rome or be outcasts. Now, there's a relationship that was occurring between another high-ranking official of the time-traveling army, and that's Lieutenant Colonel Ulf, U-L-F. And the female colonel he was talking about, Manon. Now, this has been developing over time, and Manon has decided that they have lost their way in this world. And she's convinced Lieutenant Colonel Ulf to help her into a guarded facility, and she secures 4 nuclear weapons and disables the rest. And she leaves a note stating, hey, I'm taking these with me, along with 150 of my loyalist soldiers, and we're leaving Rome and we're going about our own way. Don't come and find me. I'm certain that if you want to try anything, we can end it real quick. So Manon's gone. Colonel Fabio Rossi is upset with these events. Now, he finds out about Manon leaving, and he sees the only person that is responsible for this unrest and feels that corrections need to be made in order to get back on track. And that person, who's the person responsible? General Chase. So Rossi has the 2 mercs that just, well, 2 of the mercs that showed up recently, execute Flavius Crispus, the son of Constantine, the emperor of Rome. He's executed along with General Chase as well. So, boom, both of those guys are now taken out. Now, upset with what has transpired there, another colonel, Colonel Maffete, advises Colonel Rossi that he will leave as well and head to South Africa to rule. So here it is. Everything's falling apart. We got people going over here. They're going to take nuclear weapons, and they're leaving. We also have Colonel Rossi, Colonel Maffetti, who's going down to Africa. This sets a course for human history that has the civilized world of 361 AD fractioned into three parts. We have the Kingdom of Africa, the Holy Roman Empire, and the Refuge of Britain. Does the Holy Roman Empire win out over time? So, as you can see, it looks like everything is falling apart. So there's a big question. Did we just turn around and make the same mistakes that we've done before in the past? Well, we find that through a tale that has been told by the great Gene Pope to a young child throughout these issues, that yes, the Holy Roman Empire did succeed. There were many mentions of battles that occurred over time, but overall, the advancements of the past, we are colonizing Mars. We got colonies on the moon, and we have advanced ourselves to a great society and great technology in the great age of 1421. So there you go. Now, I may be incorrect here because I've been saying the Augustus is the emperor. Am I right in saying that? Because that isn't like the Pope, is it? I'm starting to worry that I've been using my descriptors wrong.
Augustus is a title. It gets a little freaky, a little weird with Rome and whatever else. But basically, like, if you are Augustus, it's like you are Caesar, you are emperor.
Okay.
I understand
it. Okay. All right, then. I was worried that he was a higher religious entity, not a political. So, Augustus, if you're an emperor, you're pretty much both because you can control both. But, okay.
The Holy Roman Empire.
Very good. Very good. Mark Radlich, issue 4. I mean, what do you think of our conclusion here?
I like the fact that it did address the idea that that even with whatever the issues were in the fracturing of the empire, we were still an advanced civilization by the 1400s.
Mm-hmm.
That made sense to me. I liked that's how it ended. You know, I thought overall Hickman played with some interesting ideas. I think there was room for what if one of the civilizations had stolen their technology and was able to do stuff with it. I mean, granted, you have a long way to go from the 300 AD to replaceable parts and steel and everything else. I guess it would have been a lot to ask for there to be a twist, but even maybe if they had, what if the Goths or somebody had like stolen some of the weapons and actually had a, I don't know. I thought it was an interesting idea. But there was a lot of fascinating things that Hickman could have done that was sort of left on the table, but I guess
yeah.
We only have 4 issues. There's only so much you can do.
Well, again, this was his wholly owned creator project. So he could have done, he could have done 12 if he wanted. And you're right. There is in my opinion, a lot of meat left on the bone that I would have loved to have been chomping on. Because, I mean, one of the things that they mention as the Pope's talking about the wars that were fought throughout the ages, they talked about there was a secret time traveling army that was sent back by another part, a secret sect of the Vatican. Holy crap, the dryer's done. They sent like a secret army back from a certain part of the Vatican. And I was like, where is this story? Because I guess they sent them back to fight them. And I was like, but still, the Holy Roman Empire succeeded and beat them. But still, I wanted to see that story. They just kind of briefly, I mean, this is all done in a 2-page splash where he's just like, oh yeah, we went over and killed the Queen of Britain. We took care of the mercenaries. I think the mercenaries showed up with the Visigoths. We killed them, or we took care of them as well. But yeah, man, there was a lot left that could have been done. And sometimes that's nice, but man, I would have loved some more. So I think I'm right there with you.
There's no Western civilization without Christianity. You know what I was thinking about as I was reading this? So you have the fall of the Roman Empire. You have the split of the empire, which eventually leads to its dissolution. You have the rise of the Ottoman Empire and the rise of the Muslim religion. You have the Dark Ages in Europe, and then finally the Renaissance, and then the Age of Exploration, which then leads to the founding of America. And I would have liked if they had dealt with a little bit of that, because, you know, they leave you with, okay, well, this is how the empire fractured, and then this is how it came back together, and this is where we are in the 1400s. Okay, so there was never – so I get it. There was never a Dark Ages, therefore there was never a Renaissance. But you're telling me that there was no Age of Exploration either? At no point – I'm not saying – I mean, I think an interesting tale to tell would have been how did Europeans en masse ever travel to the other side of the world? And I'm not saying that, you know, I needed to see them found America or anything, because I think that the founding of America comes out of a couple of different specific issues, which if things don't happen the way that they do, there is no America to be had. You know, if the Holy Roman Empire is what it is, and then there's no Martin Luther to combat it, you might not ever get to the point where people are like, I'm leaving for religious freedom, kind of a thing. You know, that might not even be an issue.
Yeah.
So I'm just, like I said, I would have liked to have seen that addressed as well.
I can kind of see that. I don't know how they would have handled that. I mean, they had satellites up in the sky. I think they mentioned they had satellites up in the sky to go ahead and view, you know, the Earth. They were using that, obviously, with advantages against invading armies and things like that. So as for an Age of Exploration, of course, I don't know. It may have stunted society. That might have stunted society. But of course, we see that they're exploring space at this point in time at the end of the book. But there's stories to be told. Plenty more stories to be told with this. So, all right. Well, I think, man, we've touched on just about darn near everything that most of my questions. I think usually, do you think there was an overall agenda with this book that was really obvious to you, or was it just a fun story?
To me, it feels like it's just a fun story.
Okay.
I agree.
I agree with you. Go ahead.
No, I don't know what other story he would have been trying. I don't know what agenda he could have possibly had with this. If you showed up with machine guns in the Age of Antiquity, yeah, there would have been no other empires. Yup. What's your point?
Yeah. I agree with you. I think this is just kind of a fun romp. I mean, it touches on societal issues. And again, one of the reviewers that I read was talking about how hold on a second. Yeah. I have a caller apparently.
Yes, we do.
Well, hold on just a second. Let me get back to the studio. I'm not used to the whole studio thing. Because if you couldn't tell from last week's outro debacle, hold on just a second here. Area code 336. You're on source material.
The real and the only source material out there.
That's right. Mark, we found out that there is another podcast called Source Material. Can you believe that?
That's bullshit.
I agree.
That's bullshit,
100%.
Man.
Mark,
apparently it's a music podcast.
It's a music podcast. What the heck is up with that?
I don't get it.
You tell those people to suck it.
Yeah, I already did. It didn't go well.
Ronnie, thanks for calling in, man. Sorry you got to miss most of the show. Did you have a chance to read Pax Romana?
Well, I read most of it, well, all of it, and I didn't get to give it the attention that it deserves.
Okay.
And I'm also in the midst of my traveling back to North Carolina right now. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, I'm still on the road. I don't know where I am. Mark, I might be coming to see you. I don't know at this point.
Woo! Woo!
But, what the heck? But I just wanted to call in and say I've been listening, and you guys, you know, I failed history. That's why we have Mark.
That's right.
My great explanations of Constantine's conversion. He joined with the people.
All right.
So, but awesome show, guys, and I just wanted to call in and say hey and apologize and. You do it justice, I would have screwed it up.
Hey, man, I'm glad you got the call in. I'm sure we'll be staying in touch there online here later tonight. But I would absolutely tell you if you get the opportunity to read it all, Ronnie, go ahead and do so. It's a pretty good book.
I'm going to reread it and like I said, sit down. And I was visiting family, so I was able to give it, like I said, the full attention that it deserved.
I understand.
So that's the other reason. Yeah, that's the other reason I was I decided to bow out tonight. That I would have been able to, you know, I've been doing the whole show for my car, which is not a favorable place to do that. So guys, y'all have a good night. Awesome show. Appreciate y'all.
Hey man, I'll
talk
to you soon.
Thanks for calling in, Ronnie.
Tell you guys.
Ronnie Adams of the Screaming Boy Podcast.
On the Rattlington Broadcasting Network.
That's right. So, okay. Was I in the middle of asking you a question? I can't remember. But let me see. Hold on.
I think we're lurching towards closing out the show.
Oh, we're absolutely lurching towards it. All right. I already recommended it to Ronnie. Would you recommend this to anybody?
Yeah. I think especially if you have any sort of appreciation for the Roman history, Roman Catholic history, especially. Why not? I mean, like I said, it was a different kind of comic book than we talked a little bit in the past about the part of what's going on with comics now is they're trying so desperately to come up with new things to do to keep people interested in comic books that, you know, they have to keep reinventing the entire label. To reinvent all, you know, they have to keep starting new comics over, you know, from number one after only 10 issues or 5 issues or whatever. And so, and you know, and I've argued before that I think if you just tell a fun story, I think people will be into it and people will read it. This was different. This was off the beaten path a bit, but it was definitely worth a read.
All right, very good. Well, I'm going to go ahead and say, let's get into plugs, man. I don't really have anything else to say. I definitely enjoyed the book. So, and I would recommend it to someone else as well. Like I said, I just recommended it to Ronnie. So what do you think of that? I'll let you go ahead and let us know what's coming up here on the Rattlington Broadcast. When in Rome week, kicking it right off here with source material. What's up next for When in Rome week, Mark Rattlich?
As my son would say, what are we doing next? What are we doing next, Dad? well, what are we doing next? We are tomorrow night, friend of the show, friend of the network, Andrew Graham. He'll be on. He's into history. He can probably explain what I was trying to explain before a lot more eloquently than I can.
Tell him the time travel and get back here.
Exactly. he's into like combat history and whatnot. So we're going to look at the 6th episode miniseries that was on Netflix, still on Netflix, as a matter of fact. Roman Empire, Reign of Blood. It's a story of Commodus, one of the 5 shitty Roman emperors that brought down the entire place. It was an interesting 6 episodes. I have a lot to say about it tomorrow night. I'll see what Andrew has to say. But you know, in general, it was not what I expected, but it was still fun to watch. You know, If you have an opportunity to watch it yourself, go ahead and give it a shot. Don't watch it with kids in the room. There's lots of boobies in it. But other than that, it was fun. Definitely different than maybe what I'm used to watching on. Not to mention the fact that it's like half drama, half fucking document, like actual documentary. Like they stop the show and have people just talk about what's happening.
All right. So, that's a little different.
Yeah. And then Wednesday night, myself and Jesse, hopefully Robert Cooper, but one never knows. He's got a crazy work schedule these days. We'll be looking at XDO, The Immortal Wars, has a Roman theme to it. And then Thursday at 11, because Pat made me, we're going to review the Lizzie McGuire movie.
Right. And I don't know if we've got anything on tap for Screaming Boy at all, but if we do, we do. If not, then it ends with Lizzie McGuire. Somebody call my mama. all right. How about the rest of the schedule, man?
Rest of the schedule.
Did you want to talk about the what's coming up next week or anything like that? You already mentioned Guardians of the Galaxy. That's in a couple weeks. Was there anything else on the schedule that you'd like to mention before I get into my stuff?
Yeah, in 2 weeks, right before we get into the summer sizzling tour, as they say, right before we get into weeks upon weeks of movie reviews, we have one more TV party. Following my daughter's advice, we're actually going to have a girl on the Rattlage and Broadcasting Network, Hotsy Totsy. We're going to have Alexis Haina Tuesday night on TV Party Tonight. We're going to look at the Powerpuff Girls, Season 1 from 1998. And then on the Metal Hammer of Doom, finally, we'll probably be going live at 10 o'clock at night. Life of Agony, A Place Where There's No More Pain, with the recently transgendered Mina Caputo, formerly Keith Caputo. I'm very excited about all of that. And then On Trial returns for its first of two shows in the month of May. We got two sci-fi shows this month, the first one being Contact, in which I will be defending this. I've never actually seen Contact. I've heard it's shit, but we'll see.
Ah.
The following week, like I said, we'll be getting into the summer reviews and all of the things associated with it. So a lot of themes, a lot of synergy will be happening. Right here in Source Material, we got Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 1, Legacy. And then we'll be looking at Damn You Hollywood. We'll be reviewing Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. Assuming Coop is actually going to show up, we have a Coop's pick for the Metal Hammer of Doom Vampire with Primeval Force.
We're going to do Coop's
and then,
pick without Coop. Damn it, Coop.
And then finally, because Sean made me, you're the Hunter from the Future. And that's all for now. That's all I got.
All right. Well, let's go ahead. I want to do a quick plug for our pinned podcast on the Blog Talk Radio website, where me and you had a discussion about your current battle with cancer and how everybody can get their hands on a Fight Rattlage Fight t-shirt, which I got the link right up here, folks. Go to https://represent.com. I'm just going to represent.com. Type in Rattlage, Radulich, right up there in the search bar. You will be able to easily find the Fight Rattlage Fight shirt, $24.99. You're going to look snazzy. You're going to help some people out. So check that out. And that podcast, whew, you, folks, listen, give it a listen, all right? And we come to you honest and correct here. I had the opportunity to interview Mark, and we discussed some tough topics, but maybe you're out there and you want to know you want to know just what's going on? Absolutely. Please give that a listen. Now, as for myself, you can follow – wait a second. Give the Rattlage and Broadcasting Network Facebook page a like to stay up on top of all the great podcasts that we have to offer. We usually promote those there, so you can check that out. Also, you can follow me at Stiznarkey on Twitter. The show's Twitter is at SourceMatCast. Also, we have a Facebook page for Source Material, and we have a YouTube page as well. Sometimes we get on there and we show you some stuff as we're talking. Believe it or not, Walk It On Air. And I think that is going to wrap us on up. Hashtag Fight Rattlish Fight. I think we're out of here, folks. We will talk to you at some point in the future or the past. Have a good one.